There are sign-up sheets on the table by the door, so if anybody wants to testify, please be sure and sign up on the sign-up sheets. Good morning. Let's go ahead and get started. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm convening the meeting. The date is Tuesday, January 16th, 2007. The time is about 9:08 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Conference Room on the third floor of the Office of the Secretary of State at 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. I'm convening the informal public meeting for the purpose of receiving public input on draft amendments to Rule 45 concerning voting system standards for certification. The purpose of today's informal meeting is to receive public input on the draft amendments that our office is required, that the Secretary of State's office is required to adopt under existing state law. We have Election Rule 45, a draft that is on the table in front of me by the doors. Hopefully everybody's working off of the same version. We had a draft that was initially issued, I think, December 15th as part of the initial notice of rulemaking. And then we have continued, the Office of the Secretary of State has continued to refine the draft. And the draft that we're working from today in the lower left-hand corner is dated January 12, 2007. A couple of other things by way of background that I'd like to mention. The office has used the assistance of some experts in drafting the amendments. To help us identify some of the specific security risks and define some of the testing and certification requirements. And we sort of have been following a plan and a timetable that we actually published last December that's also published on our website, and I think there's a copy of that on the table by the doors as well. Again, the purpose of the process is to develop voting system security standards, both in conformity with the election code, specifically 1-5-616-1G, that requires the Secretary of State to adopt rules that establish minimum standards for electronic and electromechanical voting systems. Regarding, and then there's a fairly long list of things, functional requirements, performance levels, physical and design characteristics, et cetera. But in particular, paragraph G is security requirements. And the draft Rule 45 that we're looking at today is specifically under that paragraph G. And as the plan, the published plan indicates, of course, we're also working under a specific court order last fall of Judge Manzanares to adopt voting system security standards prior to recertifying electronic voting systems later in the year. One thing, I understand that a number of people do have general concerns about using electronic voting systems at all. And Secretary Coffin is fully aware of that. Although this is not really the forum to talk about whether electronic voting machines should be used or not be used, rather we want to focus on drafting security standards for those machines. Nevertheless, Secretary Coffin is announcing today that he will hold a series of town hall meetings to consider some of the broader questions, such as whether or not or what kinds of voting systems should be used by voters in Colorado. Should electronic voting machines, should they be used? Should it be optical scan, internet voting, or whatever? The first public meeting will be held on February 15th here in Denver at our offices, I believe. But there will also be a series of meetings around the state as well. And the office, the Secretary of State's office, is going to release a press release later this morning. In fact, I think during this hearing, and if that's released, we'll put copies of that press release on the table by the doors. But again, we understand, and Secretary Coffin is concerned about the fact that a lot of people feel like there are different voting systems that should be utilized in Colorado. So those broader discussions he would like to have at separate public meetings. Let me next turn to introducing the people that are at the table with me. To my far left is Hillary Rudy, elections or legal specialist in the Elections Division. Next is Melody Murbaba, Assistant Attorney General with the Attorney General's Office. And then to my immediate left is Dan Kopelman. Dan Kopelman is the new Elections Technology Manager in the Secretary of State's office. Dan's role will be to ensure that that the Elections Division does comply with technology standards in voting systems and in the SCORE voter registration system and so forth. Dan, I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning, but I do want to say a little bit about his background. He has an associate's degree in electronic engineering, a bachelor's of science in electronics engineering technology, a master's in computer information systems with an emphasis in software engineering from the University of Denver. To my immediate right is Holly Lauder, the elections director. And to her right is Wayne Munster, deputy director of the elections division. And then at the far end of the table, John Gardner, who's the voting system specialist for the Secretary of State. As many of you know, John formerly was the information systems manager for 4 years in El Paso County and, of course, has a lot of experience both at the county level and at the state looking at voting systems. With that, if I have taken care of all of the preliminaries, and I think I have, I want to turn to public testimony. Again, we have a working draft. And I want to emphasize a few things maybe before I do that. We do have a formal public hearing scheduled for February 6th. The State Administrative Procedure Act imposes certain requirements about how state agencies go about rulemaking. And the final public hearing, official public hearing, will be on February 6th. But we have been working on an evolving draft, and you know, we wanted to have extra public input, and that's the purpose of today's meeting. We will take the input that we get today, build it into another draft that will be the draft that will be before us on February 6th. And I think that draft will be released by February 1, as I recall. I think at minimum at least 5 days before the February 6th hearing. So this is an evolving process. It's really important to get meaningful public input. We know that although we've really worked hard in the office to try to develop the best draft we could, and as I said, we've used expertise, quite a bit of outside expertise, we understand that there's other sources of expertise as well. So we're really counting on meaningful public input as far as developing the most effective draft of security rules that we can. So with that, I will turn to public testimony. As I mentioned earlier, anybody who wishes to comment on the draft rules, we do want you to sign up. I have two people signed up at this point. I'll start with Paul Holton. And if you'll come to the podium, introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, if anyone. I should probably have mentioned we are also broadcasting over the internet as well. So, Mr. Holton. Is that, does it sound like it's coming? Yeah. Try it now.
There we go. How's that?
Good. That's good. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Paul Holton. I'm with the law firm of Wheeler Trigg Kennedy. We represented the plaintiffs in the Conroy v. Dennis lawsuit, which is at least in part the reason that we're here today considering minimum security standards for electronic voting systems in Colorado. The stated purpose of this is to receive, you know, public input to the draft rules. The first draft of this was published on December 15, I believe, and I looked at that and noted in a significant number of places that virtually all of the technical specifications for security were criteria to be developed. I commented at that time that I thought that the process was premature, and given the obvious massive public dissatisfaction and lack of trust in the electronic voting systems that were utilized in Colorado in the last election and the massive and nationally noticed disenfranchisement of tens of thousands of voters in Colorado, and I'm not here to delve into that. I think that the Secretary is obviously very well aware of that. Noted at the legislative hearing yesterday that his most important job was to restore public trust and confidence in elections, and indeed without public trust and confidence in our elections, the foundation of our democracy is at serious risk. So I guess that's the context in which all of this is taking place. The first draft rules didn't provide any real opportunity for any meaningful comment because all the criteria were to be decided. Last Friday, I think it was late in the afternoon, I received notice from Ms. Rudy via email that the revised rules had been circulated over the weekend. I sent those out to Professor Douglas Jones of the University of Iowa and Professor Dan Wallach of Rice University, who were expert witnesses in the Conroy versus Dennis lawsuit and who are nationally renowned experts, academics in the field of computer science generally, more specifically computer security, and even more specifically electronic voting. They have not had any opportunity to review that given their schedules, so I would submit that if you're looking for meaningful technical input, this is not the way to do it. I mean, people need more than one business day, effectively, to look at something that's this complicated. So while I appreciate your intent, the fact of the matter is that this is no opportunity whatsoever, and if you're looking for meaningful input on the draft rule so you can shape the rule, and this is our opportunity, this is no opportunity, effectively. You got to have more than one business day.
Can I ask you, I mean, will they be prepared to provide written input in the next few days, or how much time do they need?
Well, you know, I haven't been able to communicate with them. You know, I traveled up here yesterday for the public hearing, and, you know, I think they are going to need some time. Secondly, if you're going to then, you know, publish the final rule on February 1st and ask for comments on that by February 6th. That kind of abbreviated timetable, given the very complex and technical subject matter, is completely unrealistic, and the schedule that you've proposed for this rulemaking appears to be calculated to deny any meaningful input from members of the public. And I hate to be negative about this, but the fact of the matter is, in the real world, people, particularly people that are volunteering their time on issues of profound public importance, can't always drop everything they do to make a living and take care of other professional responsibilities of teaching and so on that these folks do. So I would urge you to open the process up a little more if you are really serious about providing public input. I guess a couple of other things. I didn't see anything in the rule that addressed the really fundamental policy issue of transparency. We have a system here where the election is essentially privatized. You're having private for-profit companies who claim that their code is trade secret material, and we've got a secret process for reviewing that technology. We know, for example, based on real world experience, that there are very, very serious problems. There is the demonstration that was done by Professor Felton at Princeton on the Diebold machine that raises profound questions. And most recently, we've had real world experience in the election in the 13th Congressional District in Florida, where any kind of a common sense analysis of the election results shows that I think about 15 or 18,000 undervotes in the top of the ticket congressional race there. And when there was an election contest and an attempt to discover the source code of the ESNS Ivotronic, which has been certified by the Secretary of State for use in Jefferson County and Mesa County, which are two of the larger, more politically important counties in the state, ESNS said, hey, this is our private stuff, and if anybody with expertise were allowed to look at this, this could destroy our company. Well, you have an election that was decided by less than 400 votes when there were more votes in Sarasota County for the hospital board than there were for the top of the ticket congressional race, which was a highly contested razor-thin margin, and there is no ability of anybody to get access to that material. So I would urge the Secretary of State in this process to consider how there can be an appropriate provision in the rule to open this up so there can be some transparency to it. In light of the documented history, in light of the formal recommendation of the National Institute of Standard and Technology to the EAC about DRE voting, if in fact we're going to continue with this, there has to be some way to make this more transparent so the public can have some confidence that there is reliable technology and accurate counting of votes.
Mr. Alton, on that point, may I ask you, just are you referring to making software publicly available? Are you referring to more than that?
No, I'm referring to making the software available, that if people want to come in here and sell their technology to be used in Colorado's elections, they have to agree to some some provision to make their technology available for independent review. And part of the reason for this is we've had this the so-called independent testing authorities that are federally certified to do the security testing. And when we got an order from Judge Manzanares to review some of that independent testing authority testing, it was determined, and we had to fly in Professor Jones and Professor Wallach from Iowa City and Houston, respectively, to do this, to, you know, look at this stuff in the, you know, top secret room over at the Attorney General's office. We found a couple of things that were really remarkable. First, we found that virtually all of the documents in there were trivial in terms of security. Secondly, the few things that we saw that weren't on their face trivial, we found that there was very incomplete security testing done in a number of the forms that determined or that were supposed to be a record of the testing that was done showed that, in fact, the testing hadn't been done. Now we learn, 6 months later, that the Election Assistance Commission had suspended Cyber Inc. last summer for bad record keeping, and nobody told anybody about that. So our election was run on electronic voting machines that had been supposedly tested by a company that had been suspended by the federal authority, and nobody knew anything about this. Now, you know, that's really pitiful, I think, in terms of a process that people, that voters would have any confidence in. So we need to open this up in a way that people can have confidence that it's been done, that it's been done correctly, and that independent people who don't have a financial stake, who aren't being paid to say yes, so somebody can sell something at a profit.
I'm just trying to clarify that you were talking about open software, publicly available software.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think.
I mean, I know you have a number of other concerns about the testing procedures and so forth, but I just want to be clear that that's what you were focusing on when you said transparency, and that we should add something to the proposed Rule 45. What I'm hearing you say that would provide for public availability of the software itself.
Yes. That's okay. Exactly what I'm saying. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And can I mean, a consideration, I don't know whether you want to comment on this, but obviously a consideration would be whether or not the Secretary of State has the legal authority to add that to the rules, or whether that requires a statutory change.
I think the Secretary of State can condition application for people that want to, you know, sell their products at a profit to the taxpayers of Colorado, can condition that application on opening up, subject to appropriate commercial protections, to a process that allows some transparency. But to come in and say, I got a black box and it works really great, and I want you to pay me tens of millions of dollars to use your elections, and by the way, only my people can look at it because it's proprietary, takes our elections out of the public realm and privatizes it in a way that is has disastrous consequences for our democracy. Okay. I think it's a fundamental policy question, and I think it should be addressed. And I think if Melody and Hillary and the others who may look at this determine that they need more statutory authority, then if you're going to continue to use these voting machines, I think you need to go and get it.
Okay. And it is a major concern to the Secretary of State because, you know, I think part of the public debate for the legislation was that very issue. That's my recollection. And we have to make decisions about, you know, what are matters of legislative prerogative and what kinds of things need to be decided by the legislature, and then what is the proper rule of rulemaking. So it is something that we have to look at very carefully.
And I appreciate that, and I understand that. But I've looked carefully at the statute, and I think there is authority to do that, and I would urge you to consider that. And if you determine that you don't have the authority to do that, then I think you ought to address that in the rulemaking and say this is something that that the legislature needs to look at. Mm-hmm. To me, that is the most troubling aspect of this situation. Secondly, I guess I have a question. Has the Secretary been in contact with any other jurisdictions that are considering new approaches to the certification of electronic voting systems? And particularly, would ask that question with respect to the state of California. I understand that the new Secretary of State in California, the Honorable Deborah Bowen, is very deeply concerned with this and is focusing her efforts on that. And if you haven't been in touch with her office, I would urge you to do so. I think California is obviously a huge, very important state with a lot of resources, and they've been struggling with these issues as well.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, and we are aware of that.
Okay, and have you been in contact with the California Secretary of State's office?
I'm not since the new Secretary of State took office, as far as I'm aware, unless the staff has. We actually will be meeting. There is a meeting of the National Association of Secretaries of State coming up in a few weeks, and I know there will be some discussions at that point in time. So.
And I guess the last comment and suggestion that I have at this time. Well, excuse me, I've got a.
Me too. It's okay.
Yes. Has your office made any investigation of the problems with the ESNS iVotronic machines and the problems with the 13th Congressional District election in Florida? I know there have been hearings on that. I know there's been expert testimony that's been given in open court on that. I think that that is something that if we don't have an approach through this rulemaking to that technology and to the issues raised in that litigation, then I think we will have failed. And there can be no way to say that this ESNS iVotronic DRE technology can be used in Colorado unless we understand what had happened in the 13th Congressional District, where you had four counties in that congressional district. Only one of them used the DRE machines. That was Sarasota County. The undervote rates for the congressional seat in the other three counties were less than 3%. The undervote rate in Sarasota County was 16.5%. There were more votes in Sarasota County for the hospital board than for the top of the ticket congressional race. And common sense, it's compelling that there was something massively defective with that software that caused this undervote. And ESNS went into court and said, that's our private stuff, you can't look at it. We did some simple logic and accuracy testing, and it worked fine, and that's good enough. Well, I don't think that's good enough for the voters of Colorado.
Thank you. Mr. Holden, one other thing, going back to your original concern about the process, and I don't know whether this is a comment or a question, but I really do appreciate the frustration people have with trying to hit a moving target, essentially. We are working through multiple drafts. At the same time, we're trying to build in multiple opportunities for public input. And I realize, I think you indicated that the December 15th version you felt like was woefully inadequate. I think it was about 43 pages, but there may be gaps there. And then you're concerned that now for this hearing, you've got just barely got this draft. But one thing I do want to say, there's, as far as the difficulty of doing that, even the hearing on February 6th is not the final word. We are going to leave the rulemaking record open for 20 days after that. So if your experts or other people are feeling like each time a draft comes up, it's hard to gather your thoughts in terms in terms of testimony at a public hearing, we are really trying to take that into consideration, and for at least 20 days after February 6th, we'll still be able to take written testimony.
Okay. Well, and I appreciate that. I know you're trying to move things along, but as far as whether or not the December 15th draft was 43 pages, all of the technical criteria were in brackets, and it said evaluation criteria to be determined. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's, kind of the gist of what we're talking about. And as far as receiving any meaningful public comment today, we've had, essentially one business day. And that assumes that people didn't take Martin Luther King Day off. So we got this late Friday afternoon. Then you have the weekend. Then you have Monday, which is a national holiday, and here we are at 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
no, I understand.
I mean, if I'm not a paranoid conspiracy theorist, but I know that some people might look at that and say, "Gee, did they really want to get public comment on this when you have, essentially, the close of business Friday, federal holiday Tuesday morning, please tell us what you think about this." On the face of it, that seems ridiculous, frankly.
Well, and I still am inviting that comment from your experts. I appreciate
that. I understand that, but I just want the record to be really crystal clear here how this came down, which is December 15, evaluation criteria, technical criteria to be added to the draft rule, and then the draft rule comes out, mid-afternoon on Friday with an intervening federal holiday.
I understand.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Anything else?
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Kulpman, I think Mr. Kulpman has a question. Mr. Holt.
I want to ask a question. Do you have any similar experiences with the older mechanical voting machines in terms of the internal workings, the that information having been produced in the past, possibly accuracies? I know you mentioned yesterday at the hearing concerns regarding that.
I don't think I understand your question.
Is there any parallel experience with the black box, per se, of the mechanical voting equipment used in the past?
Is there any analogy to the mechanical voting? I don't think that the mechanical voting systems, had, proprietary trade secret technology associated with them.
Well, simply the internal mechanics of them is in parallel being the software design, the mechanical configurations. Was that something that was ever, I'm just curious if that was ever consideration in the past that you know?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question. I would love to be able to help you. Maybe we can talk, at a sidebar about what you're getting at, but I don't see any parallel to,
proprietary nature. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, I only have one other person signed up, but if anybody has arrived late and wishes to sign up, please sign up on the sign-up sheets. The next person is Carrie Lackland.
Yes.
Thank you. If you'll introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Carrie Lackland. I'm an attorney from Boulder, Colorado. I'm a member of a group in Colorado called Coloradans for Voting Integrity, which has existed since shortly after the 2000 presidential election in Florida. And we've been working on trying to work with public and private entities to improve the voting process and integrity of Colorado elections. I followed the Conway versus Dennis lawsuit and sat in on most of the testimony, and I'm not a technical expert. Mr. Branscombe, a member of our group, is here to submit our response to Rule 45 proposed rulemaking, but I would like to bring up the issue that I think Paul Holton just touched on, but I think is extremely important, and that's the decertification of the cyber testing authority and the timing of that and how that ties into what happened in Conway versus Dennis. I'd like to make a part of the record the New York State Technology Enterprise Corporation review of the cyber master plan, which I think triggered in part the decertification by the Election Assistance Commission. My concerns today regarding when did the Election Assistance Commission inform Colorado that cyber had been decertified, and was that fact known by the Secretary of State's office at the time that sworn testimony was presented in the Conway versus Dennis lawsuit?
Mr. Lackland, I think you're probably going in the right direction, but I just want to make sure that you're going to provide input on voting system security standards.
Yes, I
am. Not certification generally.
I understand, and I realize that there is some overlap, and I think that the original impetus of the Conway lawsuit was a lack of valid certification, and where the judge came down on in his ruling was on the security issues. I think Judge Mezzanero's but for the lateness of his ruling in the impending election would have decertified all the machines generally and not just on security issues under Rule 45. But I think just generally the testimony that I heard from Mr. Gardner and other members of the Secretary of State's office was that they relied on the ITA testing at the federal level in a great degree in the certification process at the state level. And now we know that before the testimony was given in Conway versus Dennis, that the Election Assistance Commission had secretly pulled cyber's interim accreditation for failure to perform quality assurance testing and documentation of security testing. So it goes to the very heart of what we're talking about today. And if you look at your rules, and I think Mr. Branscombe will go into more detail, but I mean, your rules continue to refer back to the ITA testing. And I think that what we have to assume at this point was that cyber did not do the proper testing, that their certification at the federal level is invalid, and that we should start from scratch, and that we should not rely on anything done at the federal level previous to now. Because if we're going to rely on something that the Federal Election Commission now has found was not done, then we're really dealing with an empty house of cards. And I would submit to the Secretary of State's office that the certification process that we're about to go through, not only under security under Rule 45, but generally as the reliability and the functioning of these machines, has to start from scratch. Because the fraud that cyber made on the Election Assistance Commission has filtered down now to every state that uses these machines. 68.5% of the votes in 2006 were cast on machines accredited through cyber. And I would submit that the percentages in Colorado may be significantly higher than that because of, I think, every machine used in Colorado was certified by cyber. This is a Colorado corporation. I would submit that this agency of the state should subpoena cyber's records and any information that's flowing out of the New York study. I believe also, as a result of the Sarasota lawsuit that Mr. Holton referred to, there's information coming out that as early as in March of 2006, prior to the testimony of members of this office before Judge Manzanares, there was a technical advisory to county election officials in Florida from their election official, Don Roberts, Director of Elections, which warned against potential system vulnerabilities, and I think that goes directly to the security issues that these rules address. So my concern is that some of these machines appear to be, pursuant to these rules, going to be grandfathered in based upon prior ITA testing. And I think you have to start with the assumption today that the ITA testing that was done in 2004, 2005, prior to today, is invalid, and that you either have to assure yourself through your new technical manager, and I appreciate the fact that we now seem to have someone in place in that position that has some expertise and some qualifications, and I would hope that Mr. Koppelman goes back and starts from scratch in looking at the ITA testing that was done on the machines used in Colorado, and that that is built into this process of your rulemaking. I think that the bipartisan forum held by Senator Gordon and Secretary Kaufman yesterday is a good start on a bipartisan effort to provide you with the statutory tools that you need to assure safe and fair elections in Colorado. And I would ask you to investigate cyber, work with other states through your national organizations and through your expertise on your staff to assure that that we're not relying at this point on federal testing that was invalid to begin with.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let Paul supplement.
Mr. Halton.
You know, I had one thing that it just occurred to me that I forgot to say, if I may. I apologize for not trying to hog the podium here at all. One thing that I think I'd ask the Secretary to reconsider in this rulemaking is whether or not the ESNS AutoMark machine can, and that technology can be certified under Colorado statute, or whether a legislative amendment needs to be made. I know there was an administrative determination made, and it wasn't made in the context of any rulemaking, that the AutoMark didn't meet the requirement that the ballot be a secret ballot. So we'd ask you to consider that, because the AutoMark has been used, paper ballot technology with optical scan, with an audit to confirm that the optical scan compilation of the votes is in fact accurate, is being used in our sister state of New Mexico and has been used successfully there. And I know that I've spoken with Lynn Ellens, who is a former deputy Secretary of State who runs the elections in Las Cruces in Doña Ana County, which is the second largest county in New Mexico, and he's a big advocate for that system, thinks that the election went very smoothly, and with the paper ballots you have a record that addresses a lot of the policy concerns about electronic voting. But just to see if that going forward might be an option under the existing system is something I'd ask you to reconsider.
Thanks. You. Next, I'd like to turn to Harvey Branscombe.
I'm Harvey Branscombe from Eagle County. I live in the unincorporated part of Eagle County between Basalt, Colorado and Carbondale, Colorado. I am a board member of the Coloradans for Voting Integrity. I am a co-chair of the Eagle County Democratic Party, and I am also a member of the Canvas Board of Eagle County. I have prepared some copies of my remarks.
Okay, thank you.
The proposed rule takes major steps in the right direction in regard to security, adding specific requirements which should be met by tests performed by the state certification process. Unfortunately, the portions of Rule 45 which pertain to non-security criteria for performance and quality of voting machinery, have not benefited from a similar rewrite, including the systems and procedures to operate it. I have therefore prepared an alternate or an edited version of the December 15th document, the more recent one coming out only on Friday, to my attention. So this is it's very expensive to copy in color, but I have a couple of copies I can provide you today.
And perhaps you could, can you also email that to us, perhaps?
I have already emailed it to
Mr.
Koppelman, as a matter of fact, last night. So that may be more convenient. In fact, I can let you see these copies.
Thank you very much.
As I said yesterday at the hearing at the State House, there's substantial agreement by election quality advocates who, from both parties, the most major parties, that current election rules need to be rewritten according to the basic principles of accuracy, reliability, transparency, security, anonymity, and privacy. Generally agreed that the public deserves a systematic and responsible approach, having a measurable success in understandable terms. This new process needs to include substantive participation from qualified and critical individuals, not only from within the election official community, but from the public. And people who lack the vested interests that are inherent in working as a county clerk or working for the Secretary of State or for a manufacturer or for a testing agency. And these people need to be ones who are willing to ask difficult questions. The one I provided yesterday was, does the system count votes accurately at an election scale? But there are many other questions, and these we need people who will not only ask those questions, but make sure that they get answered. The Secretary of State should reach out to utilize knowledge of a wide variety of experts inside and outside government and the election industry. The Secretary of State's proposal clearly would benefit from the assistance of experts in election equipment and election procedure who can and will focus on verifiable quality assurance. And also needed, as a part of this effort, are technically knowledgeable representatives of the public, and also those who are aware from their experience on canvas boards and doing logic and accuracy tests, and as candidates and as electors, about what kinds of problems can materialize with voting procedures and equipment in the field. And in addition, of course, to the usual participation of the county clerks and other county election officials. The troublesome but predictable problem with the conventional optical scan voting machines currently counting paper ballots in Eagle County is an example of how our certified voting equipment and the associated procedures in place differ from the ideal. With best certification specifications, criteria, and procedures, I know that Eagle County's long-used election equipment could be made to work in a manner more consistent with the public's vital interest in election accuracy. The clerk of Eagle County, who's here, Teek Simonton, has recognized substantial deficiencies in the operation of these optical scan machines, and she's chosen to perform a special test of the performance of these machines using voted, folded ballots. And I'm extremely glad to hear that she's planning to do that. I think it's a very responsible approach. It's not called for in the rules, but it is called for by any kind of common sense approach to the evidence we've seen in results of our logic and accuracy tests. It's been motivated by documented cases of votes appearing, not only due to nearness to folds on otherwise blank ballots, but also due to unintentional transfer of toner from one portion of the paper ballot to an oval election hot zone that's across a fold. We had severe perturbation of the 2005 election due to that transfer of toner, and Teek Simonton changed to a separate ballot manufacturer in order to try to avoid that problem, but we noticed the same kind of visible transfer taking place subsequent to that, and although we didn't find election errors that appeared to be caused by the transfer of toner after changing manufacturers, nevertheless, it's apparent that that's a widespread phenomenon and it must be watched for, and the logic and accuracy tests as currently performed around the state are not necessarily even testing with folded ballots, even though the majority of paper ballots being read by the optical scanners probably are folded in the actual election. The present document appears to reflect a lack of awareness in regard to actual field conditions for elections. Hence, if implemented, almost guarantees a future generation of election equipment which will blur our Colorado elections with attendant inconsistencies and failures, generating countless contests of elections, delays in vote tabulation, etc. These can mostly be avoided with properly designed technical criteria for voting equipment certification, including specific criteria for acceptance and denial. And perhaps it's the right moment to point out that if you look at the Rule 45, you'll see that except in regard to the security portion, which has recently been rewritten, the typical requirement for a test of certification is that the manufacturer should provide documentation or attest to the fact that they have considered certain criteria for quality, and not, in fact, that they have proven, or that, better yet, the Secretary of State's office has proven that the machine actually passes a specific criterion that's expected of it to perform an election. And that's almost across the board, and there are, that is the primary reason for the edits, my edits to the Rule 45 document. What's also needed is a similar effort to establish better election procedures, which must be designed to match the anticipated failures of existing as well as new equipment, and covering at least voter authentication, ballot handling, equipment operation, equipment and software testing, post-election audit, vote tabulation, transmission, reporting, remarking of ballots and recounting, etc. In certifying the voting equipment on behalf of the state of Colorado, it behooves the Secretary of State to methodically learn from the past. There have been certainly many problems with elections in counties around Colorado, since millions of dollars are spent on campaigns in these Colorado elections, not to mention the amount spent on the federal campaigns using the same equipment. It certainly makes sense to be absolutely sure that the equipment being recommended by the state does take into account weaknesses and problems that have been found in the past with suitable defenses or corrective measures. And I actually wrote these questions in the for the purpose of the previous rulemaking procedure for Rule 45, which I think took place in early 2006. I'm not sure, but these questions I haven't gotten answers to yet, and I think the election rules ought to provide answers to these questions. Is there any record of voting machine difficulties or other exceptions to the usual processes of elections recorded by the Secretary of State or county clerks? Is there a practice of logging any such problem while it's occurring to make a record which could be used by the Canvas Board or later in the process of redefinition of certification criteria, such as we are undertaking today, changing statutes? Do Canvas Boards ever produce a written record of their discussions or decisions? Are these records maintained somewhere? Are election judges given a chance to express their opinions, or their observations or concerns about things that may have gone unexpectedly wrong, or for that matter, unexpectedly right with an election? Are other election staff and officials given such a chance to express themselves about an election? Are paid officials in any way prevented or dissuaded from comment by any law or common practice? If any of these records exist, are they kept in a public record which can be collected from counties for analysis and review by the Secretary of State and by others, including, for example, voting machine manufacturers who might want to improve or redesign or build equipment to solve the problems that we're encountering? Such a record, or better yet, a collection of records, would surely be helpful in defining the criteria for testing and certification of new voting machine technologies. And so I recommend to the Secretary of State to revisit not only Rule 45 in its entirety, but the remaining rules pertaining to elections to determine which of the terms of these rules are not consistent with accurate, reliable, transparent, secure, anonymous, and private elections. And I think I'll stop there, but my written comments go on to include a the points which I made yesterday at the state capitol, which are include but are also go beyond the scope of the rulemaking procedure today. And then I've included a set of points that are categorized in terms of testing, audit, recount, voter verification, certification, motivation and incentive, paper ballots, voter registration, provisional ballots, eligibility determination, information collection and reporting, oversight for the Secretary of State, an expanded role for canvas boards, direct recording electronic equipment, optical scanners, and additional pre-election function testing and reporting deadline. And those are all topics I've identified that need attention in the rulemaking process here by the Secretary of State. And of course, I'm very much looking forward to a new regime here and hoping that more attention will be paid to some of these points that I'm bringing up. But I feel that it's not maybe not even honest of me to make complaints without providing alternatives. And so that's why I've taken the time to edit the Rule 45. And I'm not making the claim that my Rule 45 is the ideal Rule 45, but rather that to look at the redline places will perhaps wake up the process of revisiting this rule to notice the weakness or the deficiency in the previous rule. And I would expect that some attention will be paid to each of these points, and I think that a discussion should take place among the correct parties. And I would be happy to join that discussion, but in any case, I hope that people who have the same kind of mindset that I do are involved so that the public interest can be served.
Mr. Branscombe, I want to thank you for all the time that you've put into this and all of your thoughtful analysis you've continued to put in, and this is very, very helpful. I really do appreciate it, and I appreciate the fact that you've provided such good materials. That's a terrific help for us.
Thank you very much.
And if there are no other questions, I don't believe I have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else present that would like to testify this morning? Seeing none, we'll wrap up. Again, I do take note of Mr. Holton's concerns that there really wasn't much of an opportunity to come prepared today for a lot of input. But we really do welcome, and Secretary Kaufman places a high priority on this, we really do welcome public input. And if anyone here or anyone listening can provide written comments, written suggestions, criticism, help us fill in gaps where you see them, we will still be looking at that as staff up to the February 1 draft and beyond. As I indicated, we'll have another draft by February 1. We'll have a public rulemaking hearing on February 6th, and then we'll leave the record open after that. So, again, please don't let the difficulties of trying to keep up with the different drafts deter anyone, because we really are trying to get as much input as we can. And so any additional comments or suggestions, Hillary Rudy is the contact person for the proceeding. I think many of you are on her mailing list, and if you're not, please speak to her after this morning's hearing and make sure that you are. And if you can email or mail your comments or suggestions to Hillary, I'd appreciate it. If there's nothing else, then that'll conclude the hearing today. Again, I do appreciate everybody coming. It's really gratifying to see the interest that the public is taking. I sure hope we can keep moving forward. We know this is a work in progress, so hopefully it'll keep getting better. So thank you very much. For the record, it's 10:06, and that concludes our hearing. Thank you very much.